Hi, I'm Samiran.
Hi, I'm Nilesh.
Hi, I'm Sheetal. And you're listening to 3TB.
Three Techies Banter. So, we are back with another episode of Three Techies Banter. We usually tend to delve into technologies, facets of the technology, and a lot of times we actually talk about the ecosystem of technology, and we've talked about that in Aadhaar and other things, you know, ecosystem play. A lot of you must have come across this whole term called, I'm part of this community, I'm part of that, or, you know, we are growing this group of people, this is like-minded people. And I mean, of course, I knew of its existence, and I'll be absolutely honest, but I did not realize the power of it and what's going on in that world till I actually physically ran into our guest for today, that is Suhas Motwani. So, you know, we did this session together at ISB, and I thought I was making a very cool presentation on product management till I heard about what he had to say about communities, and I was like quite blown away. It was really fascinating. And I think what was more interesting was that how people are doing it, the science behind it, and all of that. And in fact, Suhas heads Asia's largest community. It's called the Product Folk. And he likes to say that, you know, it's been around for 5 years. But for people like Sheetal and me, who have got 29 years experience, 5 years is like the blink of an eye, you know. It's big. So, but 5 years, I think, is a long time in this world of community science and management. It's about 180,000 strong. In fact, he's also launched an app he calls InDistract. And I think without little to no advertising, they've got about 1 million downloads. So, you know, great stuff. And obviously, he knows what he's doing, and he's got a great practitioner's view on this. He obviously didn't happen on this accidentally. He's worked with PepsiCo around the world, primarily in Europe. And we are really, really, you know, looking forward to this conversation with Suhas. And we may not in this edition have too much to contribute ourselves, other than a whole lot of questions. So welcome, Suhas. Delighted to have you and looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Samir. I'm pretty excited. Lovely to meet you as well, Sheetal. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting discussion, I think. Just to like add into the intro, I think communities have existed forever, right? Like around us, we grew up, say, in religious communities, right? Think of it, whether, you know, it was the ISKCON, the art of living through the world, or, you know, if you a Christian, you go to the church every Sunday, you meet a bunch of people. So like around us, and okay, all of us grew up in schools, colleges. Think of, you know, you just staying in touch with your alumni, right? All of us have some form of alumni club. So I think communities have always existed around us. I think now there is a little bit more process to it. It seems to be like one of those channels of growth. And that's why you see so many playbooks, you see so much being written about it, and it's the center of everything. But if you think of it, it's existed forever. So I think this conversation is going to be interesting, where we could, you know, delve into some of the history and jam into, you know, things that we wouldn't have noticed. But then, you know, while we go through the conversation, we'll all realize that they've existed forever. It's just that, you know, it's probably getting its limelight today in a different form. That's it.
So I said the generational difference comes through, because when you started talking about communities, you started with ISKCON. When I was thinking communities, because I belong to the Gujarati tribe, you know, we had the communities, right? So you belong to a Luana, or you belong to whichever part of the Gujarati community. And then in the good old days, your name was registered in the community, and then you had these community gatherings. And in the good old days, ladka ladki milte the and shadi hoti thi, right? Because it was all part of that community. So I can see my age and your age difference right there.
In fact, there is a global Kachchi Bhatia community, and my friend of mine is an office bearer there. I mean, that was just shocking, absolutely.
The definition still remains the same, right? It's a group of people coming together with a common interest or some amount of commonality in the past, right? This could be cultural values, this could be ethnicity, this could be interest, it could be, you know, common professional learning, right? Across the domain, it could be, and you're just finding a common interest point, and a group, you know, folks in that same domain, same geography, come together, and, you know, they've been hanging out together. It could be in an offline space, right? In religious or online. Today we have, you know, channels like Slack and Discord where people are just hanging out. I think that loose definition has still transcended time, right? Regardless whether it was years ago or today, the overall meaning of a community still remains the same.
Absolutely agree with you there. But, you know, what I've also realized is that Samiran and I are considered the Facebook generation, and the next generation is called the Instagram generation, and the Discord and the Slack generation and things like that. But the way one looked at communities on Facebook, right, versus today communities on WhatsApp versus what's happening on Discord, there has been a significant shift, I think, in the way communities are perceived, are managed, and are being worked with by brands, right? So yes, while it's all about commonalities, etc., there are differences between these. I just want to understand from you, I remember when we were on Facebook at one point in time, I don't think I was ever on Facebook, but there were these all these communities, right? And where does that today, and where is it that communities have come to today, you know, with all these shifting loyalties towards platforms?
Yeah, I think two main points. I think platforms have changed. I agree with you. But if you think of it, yes, maybe we don't spend so much time on Facebook today, but Facebook communities is still one of the most active things for a large part of our population. It's just that social networks have a lifetime. Usually it's a decade. So I think Facebook has crossed that. And social networks usually start bottoms up, right? The adoption is usually with the teenagers and then goes up. So that's exactly why you mentioned, okay, here the next generation's gotten to a new platform. And if you think before Facebook, we were all on Orkut. Many of them probably then, you know, don't even use that. So I think from the Instagram generation, now it's already moved on to a TikTok generation. Yes, it got banned in India. That's why we don't see people around us use it. But the entire Reels format came from TikTok and then got adopted by Instagram, right? So that generational shift does come bottoms up. So platforms will change, right? But the essence is, okay, hey, there are different formats in which people get together. In a group format that Facebook brought, we were introduced to, hey, okay, all of us can get together online, right? Today, we're a lot more active on WhatsApp. Hence, you're seeing WhatsApp groups become the thing, right? All of us are hanging out there. What else has changed here? I think the large differentiation that I saw was during the COVID period, right? Pre-COVID, communities were largely offline, slightly online, right, with the Facebook groups, etc. But you still enjoyed meeting people in person. And, you know, that's where real relationships came through. Even if you met them online, you try grabbing coffee, etc., etc. You saw tons and tons of Discords come through. And that's when you saw the rise of social media influencers also come through, right? So you see a lot of people building top of funnel, post which they're able to build or, you know, get a bunch of them in a certain place, whether online or offline. In the pandemic, we were forced to go just online, right? So that taught people that, okay, hey, it's easier to get people in a group if you have a certain influence, if you have a certain top of following. Post which we realized, okay, hey, you know, online is great. You get to meet people, but the real relationships are still offline. So now in a post-pandemic era, you see the craving where, you know, lots of these online edtech that had come through, they are trying to go offline again. You're seeing retail D2C brands, which boomed during the pandemic, they are now going retail. So I think the consumers or the members of a community still want a little bit. I think we all agree that relationships offline are much, much more stronger than an online relationship. So I think the future of community is going to be hybrid. But the pandemic taught us that, okay, hey, you know, there is this power of reach that online gives you. So that is important as well. And the power of relationships, the stronger relationships that come from offline, which is important as well for communities to thrive, right? So in the post-pandemic era, I think hybrid communities is something that we'll see a lot more often. Platforms will change. Today, I think WhatsApp seems to be the most active for a certain set. Slack and Discord seem to be more for, you know, certain set. Discord for gaming, for example. Telegram for crypto and finance related communities. WhatsApp for, you know, India and APAC, because everyone's on WhatsApp. North America, everyone's on iMessage. So I think people are trying to go where their users or consumers or members are already. They don't want to shift platforms. But as and when platforms shift, I think it is important for community managers to also be flexible. A lot of us started by building communities on Facebook. Somehow our member base stopped using Facebook. So if we didn't adapt, and I know a couple of my peers who didn't adapt, they were they were kind of stuck, right? Because the members didn't come back. So as community managers, you need to be pretty flexible, go to where your members are. But yeah, platforms will change. I think the sense of community is only coming back now. So you'll see tons of more communities coming through in the next couple of years.
But you know, one of the things also that I remember when we spoke and it stuck in my head, I mean, other than the structure, the careers, the science and all that, I think you had made this whole point that how communities, you have to start off by, it should be a concept of giving. In the sense, you know, a community is not about, you know, I will derive this value and, you know, figure it out. And I think as you were speaking just now, I realized that maybe that was another thing that the pandemic and COVID did is that, I mean, at least unconsciously or whatever, we were also sharing a lot of information. You know, this is what's happening. Oh, I have got this little guide on, you know, this is what face masks do. You know, this is how you should wash your hand. And this is the best way to do this. And of course, there was a whole lot of, you know, some cure it all formulas and all. But I think there was that one, maybe there was a human or innate thing that, you know, if I know something, I should share it so that others can benefit and, you know, at least my near and dear ones. And I think what you were saying probably kind of manifested itself there is that once people started giving, the community grew. You know, it cannot happen by, you know, I'm waiting for everybody to share. You know, that's how the community
grew. Absolutely.
That actually led me to a question, which was like, are there different types of communities? Because what I'm trying to understand is, should a community always be linked around a product? Or is there a community which is really content and something driven? Are there different types of communities that exist? And if they do, then does the management of those communities also differ?
Yeah, I think the fundamentals still remain the same. But like you mentioned, communities are definitely of different types. Brand communities seem to be the larger segment. Then come the interest-based communities. I think product folks is an interest-based community where, you know, people from a product management background get together. Then come event-based communities, right? During the pandemic, for example, you saw a lot of help groups come together. Those are a subset of interest-based communities because everyone comes together for a particular cause, right? Or you can say there's a cause-based community. Those could be short-lived or it could be long-lived. Like, for example, you know, there are lots of communities around rescuing animals, for example, right? They come together.
I was just going to mention that.
Yeah. I think these are three main definitions. Each of these will then have subset, right? Within brand communities, you'll have, say, D2C communities separate. You'll have crypto communities specifically for those. So I think product-related communities, which are physical or software product, would come under brand communities. Interest-based communities can also go super wide. We were discussing religious communities, for example, professional communities, all of those will come under this. And cause-based communities, I think, are more specific to certain events or, you know, certain causes that are largely short-lived. Some of them live a little longer. But I think the definition of community allows you to even break this down further. I had read another article where there are 8 different types of communities. But then those, I would largely put those under subset, right? Each of these three can then be broken down.
So if one had to kind of understand the process of community building, right? Is there like a way of doing it? Because I know while I was reading a little bit about the slides that you presented, one of the things you say is, you know, don't think about the scale bit. And it says, see what you can do small. So I just want to understand, what is the process to community building today?
There is definitely playbooks. I think people who've been doing community management full time, some of them have come out, shared, you know, tactical playbooks on how you can get started, what you should do before getting started, how you can structure teams, have a community strategist, have a community manager, have community ops folks helping you, whether you should be building an online community, whether you should be building an offline community, what platforms to pick. How do you strategize your 6-12 month roadmap? I haven't done community management full time. So I think our structure is more been learning on the go. But for us, I think my learning has been community management is very, very similar to product management. So for us, some of the principles that we've learned there is something we apply here. And one of them, like you mentioned, was just try focusing on the next magnitude of growth, right? If you are just kicking off, your first milestone should be, hey, how do we get one person in our community who aligns with the goal? Then move on to 10, then to 100, then to 1,000. So each layer of zero that you add in will have something different you'll want to do. The challenge becomes everyone wants to become big on day one. And that's when we lose the essence, right? I think there are graveyards of, you know, Discord servers today that grew, you know, during the pandemic, and then, you know, nothing's happening there today. Mostly because everyone wanted to become the largest. And I think that's where a lot of them move through. For us internally, our focus has always been, okay, hey, are people finding value out of this, right? And quantitatively, you can measure that by engagement. Of course, there are ways you can game this metric. So you need to be cautious of that as well. Our idea is, okay, hey, numbers will come, right? If people enjoy yours, word of mouth will spread. We do a lot of other initiatives where, you know, word will spread. So we aren't worried about, you know, becoming the largest or, you know, where do we go from here? I think that bit now will happen as long as members find value. If members find value, they will recommend other people to come through. But if that is why we keep that as our primary focus. And initially, I think just focus on the first 10, then the first 100. If they are finding, and even if they're not finding value, idea is to keep going back to them to understand, okay, hey, maybe you dropped off, maybe you didn't come back, maybe this wasn't aligned. Can you just share some feedback? You know, what didn't work for you so that we can work more towards it? It takes time. I think if you spend enough time there, the rest follows through.
So from here, I was just thinking that, you know, when we're talking about these, you know, about starting small and growing, which is kind of good, but ultimately people also get inspired by great successful stories and communities that have done well, things to aspire for. So, I mean, I'm sure you have a whole bunch of stories and, you know, examples of things that really went well or are still going well, whether it be brand or any other special cause. So maybe if you share a few of those and maybe some anecdotes around that, you know, that will help people relate the abstraction of the community to the reality of the community and, you know, what it has achieved for the people concerned.
Absolutely. I think from an interest-based community, I think product folks for sure, but maybe before that, I'll share a little bit of the brand communities, right? It's not just the early stage startups or, you know, like the new age SaaS companies that are using this. There are decade-old unicorn companies. So some of the brands that, you know, the case studies that I've followed, for example, everyone here would have heard about an Airbnb, or they would have heard about the Harley Davidson motorcycles, or Sephora as a brand, the beauty brand, right? All three brands have very, very interesting case studies on how they've utilized community, both in an online and offline world. Airbnb, for example, and for any other marketplace, supply has been one of the largest challenges when you try to solve, right? That is in the early days. And as you scale, customer support becomes one of the cost centers. I think community has been something that has been at the heart of solving both these for Airbnb. When you and I book on the platform, we land up on the consumer-facing side of the website, which is Airbnb.com. But if you check out, there's something called community.withairbnb.com, which is a community portal. Of course, it's grown over time. But if you think of it, early days, the idea was, can we get hosts on a single platform where they connect with each other and share best practices, right? This allowed them two main things. Host felt they were part of something larger. They used to invite other people onto this. Second, on the inspiration bit, when you see some host doing something well, you try inculcating that and, you know, give a better experience to your people. You just need something to go look forward to. And Airbnb as a platform didn't have to, you know, create their own content. They were getting authentic, actual reviews from people who did it, right? So these were two things that really helped them. Today at scale, if you see, it has also become one of the platforms which allows people to do a lot of customer support. Recently, I booked an Airbnb about a month and a half ago, and I'd gone down to the support section to ask, okay, hey, something isn't working out. The first reply I got back was from a community member. It didn't come from one of the support staff at Airbnb. I think they've really been able to figure out a process to scale that. Another example from an offline world is Hog, which is the Harley Davidson owners group, right? They do, yeah. So they create a lot of experiences. And we've seen this in India also with, you know, car brands, the fancy car brands, etc. I think the interesting part, what they do, one of the initiatives is every month they try organizing a bike ride with all their members. Anyone can join who owns a Harley. That again, you know, brings forward this form of passion. And Sephora, the reason I brought that through is we're seeing a lot of homegrown brands, right? In the D2C segment, beauty seems to be a category that's doing really well. Nykaa in India, IPO'd. We have Sugar Cosmetics and others coming through really, really strong. The insight that they had is, if you consider UGC, a lot of girls and women in their community or their members were already sharing some form of reviews on other platforms. So their idea was, how do we collect UGC in one place? How do we help our own set of members with the questions they have? Usually anyone else buying would want to, you know, get authentic feedback from someone who's used it, and incentivize the people who are putting in time and effort to maybe write a review about something. Taking these three in mind, well, okay, hey, why don't we create a platform? And Sephora's community today is one of the most active ones, which you'll see a lot more community-driven initiatives coming through for beauty brands, right? So they've really nailed it. So these are just three examples of, you know, billion-dollar companies with community at the center of, you know, either customer support or marketing or, you know, even just brand building, right? So they've been doing it. It's not just the early stage startups. Today, I think every early stage startup, even without a product, has some form of community with their early users, getting beta feedback, etc. But it's not just early. It is much later stage companies also been doing this. Yeah, this is from the brand community side. I thought I'll share some of the case studies that I've been reading.
So that's very interesting. I just want to understand this, right? So when you think about communities globally, especially if you look at the US or you look at some parts of the world, there is a common language called English, right? Which works. Correct. When you come into the India context, right? India is the language of choice is not necessarily English, right? All of us want to speak native tongue. How do you break the barrier of native language requirement when you're bringing, you know, when you're building communities? Because to my mind, communities, you may have a common cause, but you may speak a different language, right? How do you bridge that gap between language and commonalities?
I think this is a great question. In fact, this is not a level one question. This is you going deeper directly. Because it's a great question. This is an operational. No, this is definitely an operational challenge. And for someone who's just at the surface of it, wouldn't even come across this as a challenge. And this is a very India-specific challenge. Like community managers that I've met, in fact, just went to CMX, which is a global community conference. Happens only in the US because in India, we still don't do much of it. No one even spoke about it because they don't come across such barriers, right? English is the mode of communication there. And even to the other ethnicities that they solve for, English still is a medium of communication, which in India probably isn't. Like as soon as you go outside of urban cities, I think the mode of communication changes, right? So for us, I'll share an example from product folks, how we've solved it. We still try keeping English as the primary mode of communication because we started in India, but I think today 35% of our member base is outside India. So it's very important for us to keep that inclusion in place. At a local level, what we try doing every month, we try doing an offline event in that particular city where we don't enforce. We're like, okay, hey, it is driven by the community. You all figure out what is. We will support in whatever form and fraction. And that is where I think we see a lot more people coming in, chatting in native language, because there is a slightly more local sense of flavor that comes in, right? So for us, we've been able to split it into two main ways this way, that, hey, English will still be the mode of communication for the larger community, but at a local level. And then once we get them at an offline meetup where they've met each other, we try closing the loop by creating city-level WhatsApp groups. So today we manage over 120-plus WhatsApp groups, both city-level, wow, function-level, and seniority-level. That is the way that we've been able to figure out. And if you want to do this in a completely online way, I've seen communities that create city-level forks, right? And if you, for example, if you use Slack or, you know, today WhatsApp has also come out with a community feature, we generally create a certain fork for a particular city where only those people who probably attended the event join in so that they can continue the conversation. And we try to build a ritual or a frequency around it, that every month we try to get these folks to meet at least once. And, you know, some people from the previous meetup might come back. There will be people who join in new. So I think that's how we've been able to figure out one way to continue growing the community in a more seamless fashion.
So I think this is interesting because I think two places where I've seen this happening, and not to solve for the language, but to solve for global, is that I think that this Forbes Technology Council also has local councils. I mean, they're not really councils, but they're like local groups. So, you know, it's an India or a Bombay one. So, you know, and same is there with the Microsoft Alumni Network. So, you know, while there is a global alumni network, but there are alumni networks in India than there are for city. And typically, what I've also seen happening in these accounts, so if somebody is visiting, they kind of post a message in that local group, you know, to say that I am here. Does anybody want to catch up? So, and it's a great way to, I mean, if you go to a really unknown place, it's a great way to kind of connect or find out or, you know, just kind of get a local flavor and at least, you know, meet with some like-minded people or hang out. So, yeah, that's interesting, actually. So, the other thing I wanted to, you know, the other problem that one might face in communities is, see, while it's good to be organic and good to be giving, what's been your experience that is it, are these communities or sub-communities, do they have to be led by champions? Do they have to be led by, you know, some kind of semi-influencers? Or is the general feeling that, you know, everybody will contribute and we'll let it be? Or, you know, you need to kind of give it a little push once in a while and, you know, like post something controversial and see somebody that does somebody jump in just to kind of keep the vitality going, you know?
Here, I'd say something that's slightly unpopular. I think, at least in the initial days, I don't believe communities run by themselves. Like, I think in an ideal state, in a very ideal state, we'd want to reach a state where, you know, it's completely organic. I think just like everything else, right? There needs that initial momentum that you need for something like this to kick off. And that initial momentum, in most cases, takes 6 to 12 months. And someone needs to put that effort. In very few cases, yes, you'll get a group going where there are, you know, 100 people and that conversation continues forever. That's a, you know, one in a million case. So I feel here, the advantage of social media is that, okay, hey, it's a lot easier for you to build an organic following, post which you can create a community on top of this. So I think this is something we missed out in the early days of Product Folks. And this is something I suggest to a lot more people that, hey, you don't need a community from day one. What you can do is build the online brand or the online content first so that people get to know you or the community a little bit more. Post which, it's a lot easier for you to curate that first set of, you know, 10 or 100 members that you want to. This is the power of social media, right? When we started, we were completely offline. Didn't have personal presence, didn't have, you know, brand presence. So it took us a lot longer. The advantage of social media is, yes, you can build this top of funnel a lot easier. But it is very important once you do that to also follow through with the community initiatives as well, right? Or what I've seen happen there is, yes, they built a nice little following. They put out a link saying that, okay, hey, join my community. It'll be a WhatsApp link that's not curated, that's not moderated at all. So yes, because of the large top of funnel, you'll get, say, 100, 200, 500 members joining. But then there's nothing happening, right? So I think community as an initiative needs to be nurtured, which is what I think a lot more people need to understand as step two. Step one, figure out top of funnel, figure out the right set of folks you want to build the community for. The second step, like you mentioned, Kamiran, I feel like at least in the early days, it is important for someone to figure out what is the need for this community, what are the stuff that we want to do, set regular cadence. Doesn't have to be completely organic. It could be, you know, some interesting stuff that happens in the community, post which you'll figure out, right? Some of the members will take initiative. Some of these members will direct you towards, okay, hey, this is what we want for this community. You just need to be the voice of that particular community. But yeah, unlike, I think, a lot, that is my personal opinion, that take it in a two-step approach and both are equally important for a community to succeed.
So just to follow on to this, is that now that we know that there is some activity needed and there are people who need to push it, just for the people who are listening in, what are the career paths in communities and community? I mean, are they formal? Is it like just like-minded people getting together and all? Or are there, you know, are there roles and people, and, you know, is it a profession really? You know, can you see this as something people can do, you know, or can become good at?
Yeah, I think, see, like I mentioned earlier, whether it's a brand or an interest-based community, you need someone to manage that, right? So community manager is definitely a role. It's split into three today. A community strategist, a community manager, and a community operations specialist, right? So these are the three ideas or, you know, the roles that are defined. Many times, all three are clubbed into one. Sometimes you'll see a split. Community strategy and community management would be someone. And then community management and community ops is taken care by someone. But an ideal structure is a split of these three. This is probably more defined outside of India. I think there are a lot more focus on this. In India, I think it's still pretty nascent. But because it's nascent, it is that much harder to find a great community manager here, right? So both sides of the coin is what we're seeing today in India. It will definitely become a profession. That is something that you can excel at. It's just that you need to figure out the right opportunity for you. Spend some time to understand, you know, build your own community as if that might be or contribute to a lot of interest-based community. So you have an idea that tomorrow, if you go work for a brand or build out a brand's community, you know what to do, right? It's not completely new to you. Your skills will be valuable only if you have some proof of work, right? So you need to figure out how to build that proof of work, whether it's your own community, whether, you know, you're contributing or helping other people build communities. Great community manager is still very, very difficult to find. So if you think you have, you know, skill where you can manage a ton of people and their time, right? And I don't mean by managing people or getting work done by them, but in just like if you enjoy talking to people and you enjoy steering them in the same direction, and that is something that is really, really important. Second, I think what Samiran, you also mentioned earlier, the mindset is super important, right? Do you have the mindset where you can give, and eventually at some point take back something from the community? I see that we've all grown up in a very competitive environment, which probably puts us in a mindset where, you know, you also want to take back something. It's become pretty transactional, right? So you will probably not see results for a long time. Are you okay putting in time and effort for a larger or a longer gratification, right? It is not a performance marketing campaign where, you know, you turn on ads and you'll see someone buying your product the next day, right? It is not that. You cannot throw money at a problem like this. So you need patience, right? Patience with people, patience with, you know, money flowing in much later. So patience with that, and patience, of course, with time, right? Because a community management, I think that's probably the only difference. Is community management takes a lot longer. The feedback cycle, the longer. The results that you'll see will start kicking in only, you know, 6-12 months later. So do you have patience and, you know, patience around building those resources around it? Because when it starts to flow, that is a moat, right? Because no one can skip that 12-month period. Regardless if you're a startup or a unicorn founder, you cannot skip that 12-month period. So, yeah, I think that has been my biggest learning. I think there is definite opportunity. Is it the best opportunity for you is something you need to figure out.
The counterintuitive question, like, you know, I've been talking about giving. The one question that is there on everyone's mind, how much does it pay? I mean, does it, like, is it a paying job? Is it like, I mean, or is it like a freelance thing? You know, I mean, I'm just saying, if somebody's making a decision today that, oh, you know, can I make a whole ton of money, or can it be a full-time profession? Or is it like my, you know, moonlighting weekend kind of job?
My suggestion to almost everyone is start community management on the side. Don't go full-time into it, because you need to see if this is something that interests you. And it is something that can be started on the side. On salaries or how much you can make out of it, I think varies. I've seen, you know, people offer 15,000 INR, which is $200 a month for something like this, versus the Web3 world where we saw people managing communities make upwards of 100, 150, 200K as well, right? So you can go up and build a DevRel community for one of these protocols and make a ton of money, right? Which is very, very important for them. So it all depends on, it definitely comes with seniority. You cannot get that sum of money when you're starting off. Second, I think a ton of lifestyle businesses that are being built around communities, right? You see, if you are an expert in certain space, I think social media 3.0, like where we're moving away from a Facebook world, is going to be small niche communities where people are curated into it. And I think that is going to be the evolution of social media as well. I think instead of running performance marketing campaigns, for example, if you are a mom and pop store, example, or if you are a brand like First Cry, there are a ton of, you know, mom and pop communities on Facebook, right? Instead of burning ad money, you might want to partner with them. That gives you greater ROI. So I think we will move into, you know, niche interest-based communities that partner with brands and grow together. We're already seeing this, I think, whether in the professional SaaS world or in the consumer D2C world, you're already seeing that come through. So there is a lot of opportunity. It's just you need to figure out how to tap into it. The opportunity today still lies largely outside of India. So if anyone from India listening into this, try figuring out global roles. You can always contribute. In the online first world, is permissionless, right? join their Discord, join their Slack, keep contributing. People will notice you and you can get absorbed into this. Right? And global salaries will always be more than Indian salary. So regardless of what amount you get paid, it will always be more than an Indian salary. 99% of the case, it will be more than what you're making today. Right? So if you don't know what you want to do next, join 5 interest-based communities or brand communities. Most websites on their footer will have joiner community, right? The new age brands. Whichever is your interest so that you stay relevant. Don't ask for a job here. Just be active on the community for 3 to 6 months, right? Along with your day job, just be active there. 5 communities you pick, those who you think you might want to land up at. Don't ask for an opportunity. 3-6 months when they see you active there is when you start building a relationship, right? And those opportunities will come through organically. You don't have to worry about it, right? 1 of those 5 will offer it to you, or 2 of those 5, you will be able to pitch it to them and they won't say no because they've seen you contribute, right? And this goes back to our give, and then take, right? If you think of it. So that will be my suggestion, right? If you're 0 to 5 years experience right now, just along, it doesn't take too much time. It's 15 minutes a day. That's it, right? Just contribute. Contribute meaningfully. If you don't have anything to add, it's okay.
Very interesting. But that's from a career point of view, right? In terms of saying that, hey, I want to build a career as a community manager. Just one thought, are there courses which help people become community managers? Are there? Can you become that expert in community
management? Today there are, I think, mostly global courses. I think not that I've come across any that is focusing from India. But there are schools, there's community school that teaches the art of community management. There are very, very nice books written on this by Richard Millington and by David Spinks. These are two that I have read. The Art of Community Building, I think that's what it's called. Both are very actionable, right? So I found more value in those because a course is great to get started, right? It gives you that 0 to 1. But the book is something that you can always refer to if you're stuck somewhere. Or, you know, you have particular question. They've written it in such a way that when you're stuck with certain questions, they have some tactical advice or feedback for you. So I think those are two that I would suggest that are pretty valuable. Wasn't available back in 2019, but today is Bible or a playbook for you.
So when somebody builds a community, right, one of the big things that happens is that there is always a KPI or a success identifier attached to any job that you do, right? What kind of KPIs or success identifiers? Let's say, for example, you go and speak to a company and say, I think I should work with you as a community manager, blah, blah, blah. And the person says, so what will you bring to the table, right? Now, how do you identify or what are those KPIs or success identifiers that a community manager must?
I think Sita's been thinking about this for a while because she's jumping directly into it's a great question again. I'll talk of it from both points, right? Whether when you're looking to hire a community manager, what are some expectations that, you know, you'd want from them and from the team that you set up post that? And second, from a community manager point of view, hey, what are the KPIs I should be looking at so that when my review comes up, you know, these are things that, you know, matter. For every community, I think two things that matter most is acquisition and churn on one side, right? How many new members are joining in? How many are churning out? And second, all the engagement metrics, right? These could be weekly active users, monthly active users, / engagement rate. Like, what are people on my community doing? And what is the ratio of lurkers to creators, right? There's always a ratio where, general ratio, where 1% of your community will create, 9% will engage, 90% will just view it, which are the lurkers, right? That's a general ratio. Even if you can increase that by certain bips, I think you'll do your job well, right? So first, from if you are a founder or a marketing head or, you know, as I said, looking to set up a community as a feature or a integral part of your communication strategy, I think idea is to figure out, okay, hey, do I have a 12-month runway, right? Am I willing to give this particular project or this initiative at least 12 months? Do I have resources in terms of bandwidth, which is time? Do I have resources in terms of, you know, project money? That, okay, I will need a community manager. I will need some marketing budget. I will need a project coordinator. I will need some event budget. You know, you'll need various budgets. So do I have a 12-month budget at least? Or else it's not going to work out, right? So to experiment also, it is not something that I can run for a month and close. I can write and give you, it's not going to work out if you are setting a 1 month budget for this, so at least a 12 month budget for this. And sometimes you don't have it and it's fine not to run a community at that point. It's completely okay not to run a community at that point. If you don't have both time resources and money resources, and eventually the time and money will allow you to hire people, right? The money resources also include the people resources needed to manage and run the community initiatives, right? So this is from someone looking to set up a community. Before we get into the success metrics of the community. Success metrics, again, from both sides of the party, I think for someone looking to start a community, like I mentioned, I think two main KPIs still remain, whether you're coming from this side or the other side, right? You will have to align on it, what is important for you in that 12-month period. If you're just getting started, maybe initially it will be acquisition metrics. Am I acquiring the right set of folks into my community? And retention metric, are they finding value from that time? You will not have crazy engagement numbers on day one, right? Or even if you have them on joining day, they will taper out as and when your community progresses. So initially, it is important for you to align on that. And this could be the first quarter where you figure out, okay, hey, this is going to be my first 100 users that are going to come into the community. How are they going to come in, right? So I need some marketing material to go out. I need them to fill out maybe a waitlist form. I need to pick users or members from that who will be relevant for my community, invite them, build a initial design partner program, you know, engage some of those very active members of your community. You would want to incentivize them. Understand why people are churning out. If some people haven't been active post that first 1 month, go back, talk to them, understand why they aren't there, right? So first quarter, it is more about figuring out what your community stands for. That can that will allow you to create a plan for the next 3 quarters, right? Okay, hey, these are the members that we've gotten. Post the first quarter, next 3 quarters is where you start building more engagement plan. Okay, hey, are we going to do a couple of events this quarter? Are we going to lead that up into a conference?
You, in one of your chats, talk very strongly about audience versus communities. I remember listening to that piece. And what I'm trying to understand is, very often when people say that I have a community, one doesn't really know whether it's just audiences who are coming in, like you said, the lurkers, or is it truly a community? I'm just trying to understand, if somebody was to understand a little more about, especially as a brand, if you were to think about audiences versus communities, how would you then define the two?
Absolutely. I think it's a fine line. I think content and community go hand in hand. Whichever the content part is where you build an audience, post which, when there are the many-to-many interaction coming through, is where your community layer starts, right? One cannot exist without the other. But I think the line between the two is just becoming thinner, right? You see a lot of influencers on Instagram calling their followers a community, which, if you ask me personally, I don't believe that to truly be a community. It's still a one-to-many form of communication. A one-to-many form of communication, in my opinion, will always be an audience. A many-to-many communication will be a community, right? If you were to define it in the easiest way. How they both sit on top of each other, I feel you can always start by building content which leads you to gaining an audience, post which, when you get those members, a curated set of that audience to engage with each other, is where the community aspect of something starts up. So I think that is my basic differentiation between the two. A one-to-one interaction, a one-to-many interaction will always be an audience. A one-to-one / many-to-many interaction will always be a community. You need to figure out how they get layered on top of each other.
I mean, when I'm listening to him, I'm almost thinking that, just as an experiment, if people want to do this, I'm assuming most people are on LinkedIn, that rather than thinking of ingenious posts to come up with original things, if you just make constructive comments on someone else's, you know, or maybe pick up 10 people you really admire, maybe, you know, or something, and say something constructive, not, you know, don't say random stuff. I mean, I think even that is a way of building your credibility, which I can then kind of builds relevance and whatever have you. I mean, I was just thinking, maybe that's also, rather than jumping into other communities, maybe LinkedIn, which is a ready-made platform, can also be a place to experiment and test this whole community hypothesis, right?
I think initial days, at least when you're in the 0 to 1, if you don't have an audience, the best way is what Samiran mentioned, right? Figure out 10 people you want to engage with. People will notice, right? You don't have to create original content all the time. The best, and many people miss out on this, right? And then in the initial days, if you don't have an audience, you're talking into like a black hole or void, right? The best way is go engage, write meaningful comments on people who already have an audience, already have a following, and try building a genuine relationship. And when you do that for 4-5 months, trust me, those people will also notice. Many people have also like done this as a routine now, right? It's not an organic thing. They will block out 15 minutes a day. They will go. And only thing to keep in mind is still be very mindful of their time. Don't just write a comment for the sake of. Now there are lots of AI tools that help you do that, right? So you can make out. You can make out today that, hey, this is not a genuine comment. Take some time, right? And you don't have to. If you don't have anything to add on that particular post, it's okay to skip it. Like it and follow through. The next post is something that you can contribute to, right? So, but that's a great strategy. At least in early days, this is something that I feel a lot more people should focus on doing. The base of everything is a relationship, right? So if you can build relationship, the audience will come. Audience will come. Community will come, right? Just a matter of time. But yeah, don't rush into. I think everyone wants 1 million followers tomorrow. I think it's great if you want to build an audience, I think. But if you want to build a community, it's fine to go a slightly slow in the beginning.
If you had to kind of conclude with saying that if you want to really build a strong community, if you had to give maybe 3 or 5 tips to people who are building communities, what would those 3 to 5 tips be? I understand give will be one of it, but what are those 3 or 5 big things that you would tell them with building community?
Yeah, I think the first one, like you mentioned, is definitely that, because that's a mindset. That's not a tactical or a to-do thing. It's a mindset. You either have it or you need to develop it, or everything else that I share right now will not work, right? So if you do not have the give mindset, everything else you do, people will see through it, right? When people talk about authenticity, this is where it starts, right? So I think that's the first layer of it for sure. Second, it's also something for you to internalize. It's a multiplayer game, right? If tomorrow you say that, hey, I want to do this all by myself, maybe community management is not your thing, because you will not be able to scale, right? It is directly proportional to the input, and you need to work with a team. And that's where I think the skill set of also identifying who are those early believers, who are those early contributors, chatting with them, incentivizing them, understanding what they want from this, giving them a spotlight in the community, right? So you need to let go of a lot of things. Sometimes maybe just be at the back of a lot of things, and you know, that's how I think your community will be able to grow. So I think, again, you know, the fine line that we were discussing between an audience and a community, many people building an audience, they've grown by being the center of everything, right? Sometimes the art of letting that bit go becomes harder, and the transition from an audience to a community probably doesn't happen because of that. So I think that would be my second learning, I think, building communities. Third, like I shared earlier, is also just focus on the next magnitude of growth, right? Initially, build for an audience of one, like just one member who loves your community. Post which, till you get 100 members, be very, very ruthless on figuring out if this is useful for them, right? It's completely okay to churn out. There will be people in your initial subset who don't find value. It is okay to let them go. Get another. So, for example, if you've grown to 100 members, but you see that 50 of them aren't finding value, it's completely okay to let go of those 50 and get other 50 till you get 100 people who truly love what you're doing and are aligned with that cause, right? Because if you get that, the rest 100,000 will come through. But you need those initial 100 who are aligned to, you know, building. And these are basically like-minded folks moving in the same direction, right? So that foundation is super important. I think another point that I mentioned earlier in the conversation was about patience, right? I think in communities, you need to be super patient with people, with your time in a sense, and money. In all three, I think it will come eventually, but you need to be very, very patient in all three aspects. People, because communities is at the essence, you're interacting with tons of them. Feedback cycles are long, so you know, you need to be super patient with time. And money will follow through. But if you try engaging very early on that front, then I think it breaks the sense of community. So I think that has been one of the larger learning. Fourth, I think play a good balance between inclusivity and exclusivity. I think in communities, the idea of communities is to, you know, find a smaller bunch of folks who are more like-minded, give them a safe space, an exclusive space. But at the same time, create a platform so that, you know, some part of the community just doesn't feel that, okay, you're alienating them out, right? So you need to figure a right balance between the two. Give them a nice little launch pad, right, which is where they can engage with 90% of the community. And those that are very active in that aspect, right, those are the ones that, you know, have been adding value. Those have been, you know, your early contributors. Try getting those folks some added benefits, right? So create that exclusivity. But if you don't do that, life takes over for all of them as well, right? There are other priorities that come through, but every human wants that feeling of being special, right? So once you do that and give them that added benefit, I think the balance between the two has really worked great for us. Of course, we are also trying to get better with each day on this, but I think that principle is something that drives a lot of communities, right? So creating a balance between the two. And last but not the least, I think have fun while you're at it. Because if you're not having fun, I think it is very, very evident in the community, right? So if you want to build communities, try picking spaces you are personally passionate about at that particular time, right? Today, you might be passionate about a certain particular topic. I think it's easiest to build communities around that because you have an inherent curiosity. You have an inherent need to, that you want to chat with people about. This might change over time, but if you build communities in the spaces you're passionate about, I think your life will be a lot easier. Right? So I think that is one thing that I would end with. Tactically, I think there are a ton of other things that you could do, but then it comes down to very contextual, right? Hey, what kind of communities you're building? But these are just some learnings that I think I wish someone had told me when I was starting off. We'd have easily saved like 9-12 months of our time.
Yeah, this is absolutely fascinating. And yes, Sohas, I've been kind of reading up on communities for a bit. Ever since I think we started off our own podcast, Samiran and I have been debating about how we can build a community and things like that. We haven't taken any step in any direction. And yeah, I think it's absolutely delightful having you here. And I think I learned, I've kind of taken notes as we were speaking. It's quite interesting what you've said. So thank you so much. And I'm sure that our audiences also have, you know, figured that there is a new space, which is not query engineers and things like that as a career path beyond in the new space of the new, you know, in the new tech spaces.
Yeah, I think in the AI and machine first world, which we are moving into, I think community management is still a human first approach to building companies, right? So I think that bit is never going away. I don't think an AI will ever replace. In fact, the need for a human touch will only increase, right? Because every other aspect of your life will either get automated, you know, it'll free up your time, or you'll have some agent doing it for you, right? So the human element of building companies is still going to stick along. And I think that's where community managers are only going to get more relevant today.
That's absolutely great.
Just a big, big thank you to you, Suhas, because I think for a topic as abstract as this, I mean, you've kind of definitely kind of given us that abstraction layer, but also given people helpful tips on what to do and not do, you know, which is very important. In this world of unicorn building, you know, that patience being a virtue, it's like, you know, just hold back. Don't get too carried away. I think all great tips. And I think, yeah, I mean, that's always a great learning experience for me personally as well. So thank you very much for being part.
Thank you so much for hosting. I think this was a fantastic discussion. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, the 3TB community come alive. And I'll be following through with that. But thank you so much for hosting this. It was a pleasure.
We may just land up coming to you for all kinds of tips and, and guidance on that one. Great. Thank you so much, sir. Thanks once again.
Thanks, Shiva. Thanks, Samir.